It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Hey, a lovely day here in Hawaii, eh? So, many things going on, and remember, how do you get to us? Go to carolcox.com, and you can listen there. And also, you can go to kwai1080am.com and pick up the information there as well, streaming live. And you can join in on some of the other shows in the afternoons right here at KWAI. And today I got Mr. Tony Lucretio in the studio with me, and he's an attorney, and he's going to be sharing some information as to what's going on with the disciplinary board of the Hawaii Supreme Court. And he's actually going through that process, and we're going to talk extensively with him about what is going on in the system. And if you care to join in conversation or call in and share with him or your opinion, and maybe you have had experience with this board, 524-1080. And later on, we're going to talk about, this DLNR, and with all due respect, I don't think that the Suzanne case believes that she is governed by the laws of common sense, common courtesy, and common decency. Just give you a real quick one. She's so busy worried about the black eye that she's going to give the governor because he appointed her. And when you take a step back and look at the entire DLNR, the whole thing is a black eye, blackened and bruised, because of their activities. I've invited them to come on the show. They never are able to come. No one is available to come. They're busy that day, and we give them ahead of time and alert them. And there's a shenanigan that just was pulled. And just to give you an idea so you don't think that I'm pissing and moaning about things that don't matter. On the Big Island, there was a situation where an officer was promoted. They did an interview. That officer, they felt, the new supervisor, director of DOCARE, found out that he had been selected and felt that it wasn't the best qualified. So they went back and reviewed it, revisited and opened it up again, re-interviewed, and they appointed Henry Heine, who's a game warden here, a conservation officer, stationed here, but moving to the Big Island. This was for a managerial position, branch chief for the Big Island, that county. Well, Suzanne Case got an anonymous letter, or a couple of anonymous letters, and I'm told that Mike McCartney is a friend of the person, and that many of them were behind pushing this thing. So the long story is, Suzanne Case picks one guy, cancel him out, they pick another guy, because there were supposedly, quote, anonymous letters about this person's character. She, in turn, strip-searched him, basically. She didn't search him, but stripped him of all of the responsibilities of a branch chief, and then handed it to a gentleman named Lino. So three separate occasions here. So we can't trust her, and unfortunately, it doesn't say much about the governor's strategy and honesty if he is allowing himself and to be his administration to behave in such a fashion. So we'll keep you posted on that one. But, and by the way, we're told in inquiring about paperwork on this that covering, we don't find any paperwork. So you go figure. Suzanne Case is a bad case for the people. So anyway, we've said enough about all of that, and we're going to invite Tony Lucretio in. And Tony is an attorney, and as I say, we'll have him to explain and share with us what some of the things that are going on with the disciplinary board of the Hawaii State Supreme Court. Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, unusual, to say the least.
Well, welcome to the club.
The reason I'm here this morning is, I'm sure, the very first time that an attorney has been permitted to make a public defense of attacks on him. Usually an attorney before the disciplinary board is gagged and may not speak about anything with the disciplinary committee. The unusual thing that occurred in this case is the disciplinary committee chair, who I asked to be replaced for bias, decided to make the hearing that took place on Thursday, February 25th, a public hearing. Once they ruled it was a public hearing, then I can make a public response. The board of the disciplinary committee was informed I would be on your show today to make the public response, that I had asked you to listen to and review documents, and as a layperson, just like juries are constituted, to make rulings or, excuse me, technically they're called findings of fact on what I've proposed in my defense, and that be announced after you've had a chance to review the documents and we find out what the final ruling of the disciplinary committee is. I've not been informed, but I suspect they're going to recommend disbarment without my ever having a hearing. What happened, and is the most important thing, is that there was a hearing set for August the 5th of this year, excuse me, of last year. And I was informed by my wife, who was my sole staff, that it had been changed from 9 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. When we showed up at 1 o'clock, they told me I had already lost, a default judgment had been entered, and I had no hearing. I immediately filed to set aside the default judgment using a declaration of Barbara Lucrecchio, who admitted that she made a mistake. At that time, she said it was a mistake. Changed the hearing time, and that I had nothing to do with changing the hearing time. Under usual circumstances, I would have been granted a hearing at another date. Instead, the hearing officer, Margie Bronster, who was Attorney General at the time I was head of legal aid, we constantly kicked butt of Attorney General back in those days, and Ms. Bronster said she didn't let that influence her when she was appointed to this. I think it did, as the facts here will show. That's minor. On the 9th of February, my wife entered a second declaration. This matter was so serious that I asked for a divorce from her, because I found out that she had decided that I should stop practicing law. I'm 78 years old. I supposedly had a stroke. Not sure whether that was true. And when we married, it was decided that our lives would be service-oriented. We met when Barbara was a nun, Sister Marie Bernadette, in Detroit, working in the poverty program, and I was also working in the poverty program in Detroit while going through the steps for priesthood. I was ordained and took the vow of celibacy, and before we could marry, I had to have Rome dispense me so that we could have sex when we were married. Barbara decided at 72 years of age that she'd had enough of the service. And she was right. It was grueling. It was times mostly pro bono work, which meant my specialty as an attorney was not getting paid. She was my sole staff, and I had a paralegal who lived at the house. Barbara went to our clients and said, drop your cases so he has to stop practicing. She went to the paralegal and said, you have to move out of the house and you should not be paralegal for Tony anymore. I didn't know this at the time, but on the 9th, she then admitted for the first time that her desire to get her house back, our house looks like a huge filing cabinet and is constantly filled with clients, etc. I do not blame her for wanting the house back, etc. When I asked for the divorce after I found this out, I retracted that, but as in many divorces, things go along. We decided not to divorce. We're both Catholics, and divorce is not open to us. And so she has moved out of the house after I offered for her to live there. I would live elsewhere. Here is her declaration. I'm reading for it, and I will give you a copy of it in the pile of materials. I, Barbara Locricchio, declare the following, that I am a resident of Rutherford, North Carolina, and over the age of 18, that I take full responsibility for having mistakenly changed the appointment in Tony's calendar for the hearing, that I not only changed it on the calendar, I organized his day to arrive at the hearing at 1 o'clock, that I do not know what led me to come to think that the appointment had been changed from 9 to 1, that I remember seeing several documents for motions to dismiss with a start time of 1 p.m. Maybe I thought the entire hearing was 1 p.m. This is the key. That although I helped prepare his arguments and exhibits and hoped he would prevail and not be disbarred, I cannot deny I was concerned about the kind of practice that he had been pursuing to the financial detriment of our family and damage to our marriage and my health, that it is even possible that in changing the calendar, I was influenced subconsciously, since I wanted Tony to limit our law work and even retire from his legal practice, because I was so exhausted and could see he was exhausted too. I declare under penalty of perjury that the above is true to the best of my knowledge. That declaration, which was sent to the disciplinary committee chair, was not sent to the board. Also, we discovered that a central ruling of the disciplinary committee is the Office of Disciplinary Counsel staff cannot reveal any matters that they're closed, and you can't make them public. Once this declaration came in, I asked the chair to seal it so it would not be seen by Mark Bradbury, the staff person, because I believed he would make it public to opposing counsel. That was denied by the chair. This is a simple request to protect my wife's reputation, and was very unfeelingly denied by the chair, that my fear was absolutely then proven right. And in a hearing on a matter, James, the Bickerton, was the opposing counsel, who was the person I thought Mark Bradbury would give this closed information to. Mm-hmm. He went on the record and cited the information in this closed document. I asked the chair, because that had happened and a cloud was over the entire proceeding once that rule was broken, that before the hearing it had to be a investigation whether that occurred or not and whether the document, and I've got the transcript of that document, mm-hmm. which I'm placing on the pile of things that I'm giving to you, was sufficient to show that confidentiality had been tampered with. The chair refused, and the chair did not tell the board about that. I was given what was to be 5 days to make my case at the hearing. The hearing officer, Ms. Bronson, decided when I didn't show up at 9 o'clock that I would never have a hearing. She immediately withdrew a request for extension of hearing, so I couldn't have one. Mm-hmm. I may be the first attorney ever in the history of the disciplinary committee to be disbarred without a hearing. The Supreme Court, who will have to act on the recommendation of disciplinary committee, would have to rule that I could be disbarred without a hearing. Now, this defense is an extension of the hearing. We notified the board I would be here, that we will send a copy of the recording of this hearing to the board and to the Supreme Court. Also, as many of your listeners may remember, the Star Advertiser did 4 front page extensive articles on mm-hmm. the Kahuku case, mm-hmm. in which they wrote an editorial that the landlord was right and we were wrong in that case. That matter is now before the Supreme Court. No final decision has been entered on that, even though it's been months since we've asked that the issues be examined. The decision, I met with the attorney, Mr. Jeff Portnoy, for the Star Advertiser. He serves on the board. He recused himself from hearing. Also, I was accused once before of stealing money from clients, and that matter went to the federal court, and I won that case and $500,000 judgment for the jury. That judgment is the largest in the history of defamation cases. If the press...
In the state of Hawaii.
In the state of Hawaii, I'm sorry, yes. If the press does not include this defense when they announce that I've been disbarred for taking money, then the defamation will again be followed up on. Mm-hmm. So I will send it to the press.
So again, you file legal actions against the press...
Yes.
And then prevail.
I filed legal actions against the legal aid staff who accused me.
Okay.
The press covered it. Once the press covered it and published those accusations, then it is called defamation. You don't have defamation until it's published. Mm-hmm. I didn't name the press because they were misled by the staff. The jury ruled $500,000 in my. The final amount of money was somewhat less, 380 something. And I used that money then to become a gentleman lawyer and continue to practice. My clients thought I was still legal aid, and I continued to specialize that
and,
way.
And you were one of the founders of Legal Aid, or the founder? What's the history, the background?
No, Legal Aid is an old institution. There was a war going on at Legal Aid and between the staff. The staff was, and it was front page on the newspaper. I accidentally, without my knowledge, submitted an application. I was national chairman of all the project directors in the United States back before email and electronic communication. I was the director of Legal Aid in Flint, Michigan. Everyone will know about Flint. The chilling, what has happened in Flint is, I wish I was there so I could bring many suits.
Some justice of suits.
Yeah. Nobody has been prosecuted. The governor is clammed up, etc. Anyway, I was having a staff meeting with the 20 attorneys I oversaw in Flint, and a very funny lady, paralegal Maddie Fordham was her name, who since died, was giving me a rough time about something, and I said to her, Ms. Fordham, I don't need to take that aggravation. An application for the position in Hawaii arrived today, I said jokingly, I thought. And I said to my secretary, Helen, who was 65, I'm now 78, and I thought at that time she was old. I don't anymore. Send my resume to Hawaii. Everybody laughed, and we went on with the meeting. Shortly thereafter, I get a call telling me I'm one of the two finalists for the position. I said, what position? They said, director. I said, I'll call you back. Mm-hmm. Helen, she said, you told me to send it. I told my wife this funny story. She had just driven into a snowbank. She told me to get on the plane. I got on the plane and became the director of Hawaii Legal Aid. I did originate the process that was adopted nationally for clients to set the priorities instead of attorneys picking cases that they wanted to do. That did not go over well with the attorneys. They then accused me of stealing money. That went to the federal court. I won big time. The situation here, and I would now go into the technical problems, which I say there was not a hearing on the 25th. We arrived, believe me, early for that hearing. It was to be at 1:30. I had a written letter from the chair saying the hearing will be at 1:30. We were not going to give you an oral argument, but because we didn't notice your attorney with the findings, we're, in effect, forced to give you an oral argument. What was to be 5 days, they gave me 20 minutes. At 1:30, when the hearing was to start, we were in a cubbyhole room, and John Ehrlich, who's sitting alongside of me here, was in the room. The person I had accused of violating the confidentiality came into the room and said, the case has been called and we are in executive session, which meant that he was included in executive session. You cannot have executive session which allows a board or committee to have a private, secret meeting, destroy all notes, etc., unless you file follow simple rules. You had to first call the hearing, invite the public in, and then call for going into executive session. They kept the public and me out. Did that. They then have to vote to go into executive session, and the public is, and I would observe the vote. They're then supposed to say the topic is this. None of that. We will never know it. Therefore, they then spent 45 to 50 minutes in executive session, putting a cloud over the hearing and, in effect, making no hearing, because the executive session, whatever occurred, was illegal and a cloud. We had raised a personnel issue about the telling James Bickerton, which he admitted on the record, about the secret information. They were able, under executive session, because of personnel matter, to go into executive session. They just could not do it. And remember, these are attorneys, judges, people who know better, few lay people on that group.
You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Mr. Tony Lucretio, lawyer, attorney here in Honolulu. And he's giving us some background and information on the ODC, Office of Disciplinary Counsel, which is found in the Supreme Court. Now, the reason I took an interest in this, I've met a number of lawyers, attorneys, and I used to think that attorneys had power and extra power to boot. But what I've witnessed is that there's the ODC, and some of the attorneys are just deathly afraid to navigate this process of law. And others seem to have no fear, have favoritism, or have friends. And I found myself in a situation where there's an attorney had a complaint filed, and I had been associated with that attorney. And, you know, I'm from the old school. If you know the facts and it's the truth, spit them out. Don't spend taxpayers' money BSing. So I took upon myself to contact the ODC investigator, and in turn, you know, look, I'd be happy to come in and give you an affidavit, give you specifics. You don't have to put me under advisement or Miranda. I'll waive all my rights. I'll come in because the facts are the facts. I'm old school. You know, I know there are law degrees and all of this. And I found myself on the receiving end of a comment later that I was disruptive and uncooperative and some other terms. And how do you jump from there when I'm calling you up as an investigator on the matter saying, I'm Carol Cox, I understand you have an interest in speaking or looking in a matter, and I'm a witness to it. I'll come in and give you a statement and swear to it on the oath, right, and waiving my rights. Didn't want to hear that. So it appears that this ODC, what I've witnessed through other attorneys, and some get pulverized, and others seem to have a revolving door. You learn that they're not disbarred or suspended, and they come back, and then 6 months or 5 months later, and what does it take? So are they that powerful, or can they do these kinds of things? I'm not a defender of lawyers, of course, you know, because that's like going out and saying, I found myself defending sharks, you know, in a shark fin, but defending lawyers, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, I think why I asked you to do this is not because of your experience with ODC, which I didn't even know about, mm-hmm. but this is a matter of a different body, disciplinary counsel, which you did not have mm-hmm. any experience with. When you are a lawyer, being a lawyer is not a piece of cake. You have to defend your clients. And you cannot worry about what will happen to you because you defend your clients. Your duty is that simple. They are your boss. And if, in fact, you're going to step on toes of powerful people, tough, you must do it. What happened here is that a judge, Judge Richardson in the district court, filed 12 complaints against me because she admitted through her attorney that she had taken a 100-page secret document and sent it to all of the judges who were ruling on the evictions of my clients in district court and kept that from me and put that in writing.
And that was a Kahuku.
That was the Kahuku case. Exactly.
Yeah, you were on the show talking about that. And we, I think we posted that actual letter or something up.
Exactly.
A year ago or something.
And it was put in writing. So we went first to the Judiciary Committee, and they said, oh, it's okay for a judge to do that. So it means that any opposing counsel simply sends stuff to Judge Richardson, and she gives it to the judges secretly, and we lose every one of those cases.
Now, what are they offering as a rationale for denying you, the condensing everything where you would spoke? You'd have 5 days, but they gave you 20 minutes. What kind of justifications are they presenting or advancing? Do they feel they have to? You're deserving of one?
Very simple. I didn't show up at 9 o'clock, therefore it's all over. The law doesn't work that way. You have to show that the attorney who didn't show up did it intentionally. All of the evidence showed I did not, and in fact showed up at 1 o'clock. That intentionally. So under normal circumstances and no bias, I would have had a hearing at another time. They decided they had seen, because I had to put all my evidence in before, they'd seen the evidence. They knew if I got a chance to argue that evidence, I would win. So they made sure I did. She made sure I didn't. She wrote a 72-page report to cover a 10-minute hearing. The chair of the disciplinary committee allowed her. She only had 30 days to do that. She got 500% more and did not comply until December 31st, when it should have been in September 5th. And the chair allowed her to do that. So we said, hey, my attorney can't be there on the 25th. He's in California. He's got a prior case. So would you extend it to sometime after April 1? 5 weeks. She had 5 months. Unequal protection of the rules by this chair. So the key issue, in fact, the only issue, is should I have had a hearing? Mm-hmm. And when you make your findings based on facts, then if you decide, yes, you should have had a hearing, you didn't get one, 20 minutes is not sufficient to respond to 72 pages of charges. She had to go with that extensive report to try and mislead the disciplinary committee to do a red herring to make it look like she had good cause for not giving me a hearing that she didn't raise. We had key pieces of evidence that I was accused of stealing money from the client. We had put in that the client that the client had given me authority to use his money to go and challenge the fact that the rail funding, he had a 10-year lease on the Pearl City station area, and that he had a right to receive the Fifth Amendment constitutional right to due process and to have that money given to him. They denied that, and the money, which may have been upwards of $1 million, was given to the wrong party. The attorney for the wrong party is created a false claim to stop the bankruptcy that James, that Mr. Slemons was in by not paying his rent. He paid the rent, but they inflated the rent by $100,000. The bankruptcy court ruled that that attorney, whose name I won't mention because ODC has still not acted on our complaint. What they do with our complaints is they don't rule for us or against us. They let it sit, which denies our civil rights. Disciplinary committee and ODC cannot deny civil rights. There's a group of attorneys who we have filed complaints at. They hush them up, hide them, and that's what happened. The $100,000 was appealed all the way up to the Ninth Circuit. They ruled against that attorney and said he intentionally misled the judge, and therefore that's why the judge signed the order. They had attempted to also have sanctions issued against me, issued against my clients. The sanctions were that I moved the case from state court to federal court. We noticed the ODC and the disciplinary committee, hey, Ninth Circuit has ruled on this.
Wait, let me pause there for 1 minute.
All right.
I'm suggesting that, leaving the listeners thinking that the SHIP, the State Historic Preservation, is a company, or it is a government agency.
Exactly.
Which should be above reproach completely, and being more aggressive, because the funding and everything comes from that. So anyway, I didn't want to left it hanging as if suggesting that they're a private entity. They're a government body.
The Federal Department of Parks oversees the federal money coming into Hawaii. And for the first time ever, they said, we're going to pull that money because we find horrible things going on there. I then moved the case from the state to the federal government, the federal court. And the federal court ruled that by doing that, I was frivolous. I didn't think so, but I won keeping my clients from being named. There are times in an attorney's career when he must fall on the sword and take the blame. I did that. My clients, all the way up to the Ninth Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit Court, were found not liable. So I won that issue in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And ODC was informed. They covered it up. They did not tell the disciplinary committee. Therefore, the question, should I have had a hearing to do what I'm doing now, is, in my opinion, you bet your life that's the case. And that anybody looking at this would say, You cannot, because a guy didn't show up at 9 o'clock but showed up at 1 o'clock, and his wife admits she was trying to stop his practice. Right. That is not just a loose statement, but one that led to tragic separation after 46 years of marriage. When I started to talk about it at the disciplinary committee, I broke down. That is, while I tried to withdraw that request, it was too late. Anyway, so that's issue
that
one.
Matter?
We are now legally separated, and I'm trying to get an annulment. That annulment will, under new rules by Pope Francis, I would be able to get an annulment, I think. But a finding that I took money will kill the annulment. Also, I worked very hard. I was the Micronesian, Federated States of Micronesian, appointed person to the U.S. Embassy in Washington to work on a project to get funds to address the rising oceans and global warming adaptation at a project here in Hawaii. I did that project. About 10 presidents of countries came to my home in Manawili, where we had done projects, including what later became housing for homeless, which we talked about here. And all of that goes to my credibility, and again, all of that was silenced. So those are the issues. Once we've got, I know you've got a call coming in at 10:30. I think it's important, and one of the reasons it's vital, I have asked bishops to appoint me as a deacon, or if I'm my annulling of the marriage goes through and I get ordained a priest, that I be a priest or deacon on special assignment to the United Nations. I've been working for some 20 years on this project. We have 25 people. We have a conference center up on our lease property in Hawaii, which is used for conferences, and it's wired so that people from all over the country. However, my reputation would go down the tubes if it's found without a hearing that I've been disbarred under these facts. So, I think at this point, let us assume that your finding is I should have had a hearing. Oh, let us assume that your finding is that I should have had a hearing. In that case, we're giving you the declaration of James Slemons, which says, under oath, you are to use my money to get me what I deserve under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution and file the case in federal court called interpleader action and in the Court of Appeals. That took 2 years of doing that. We knew in advance that there would not be enough money to do that. So I reduced my fee for doing it. I cut it more than in half. And we knew that even then it wouldn't be enough. And so then I agreed to continue to do that work pro bono for free. Mm-hmm. And spent, even at the reduced fee, about $100,000. I was accused of stealing the money belonging to my client. What's important here is the bankruptcy judge ordered me to turn over bankruptcy money. James Slemons did not go into bankruptcy. He was aware of the reputation of the bankruptcy court, which played oh boy mm-hmm. with usual bankruptcy attorneys. So we had to just put James Slemons Hawaii Inc. That money did not belong to James Slemons Hawaii Inc. It would have belonged to that company when we sent the rent to the attorney. But he wrote void on the check mm-hmm. and sent it back, so it never left my trust account. It was always James Slemons' personal money. At the hearing, they said, I took that money. The Supreme Court rules for disciplinary is an attorney can have money in his client trust account, but he can't take that money out until he earns it. So as I would earn the money, I would take out checks to myself and my secretary to pay for work we'd already done. They said, no, you stole the money.
Now, I was looking through some of the paper here. Have they ever been under suspension on any matter? Or have they found you guilty on anything historically?
No, absolutely not. This is in 55 years of practice, mm-hmm. I have had a clean record. So I was never suspended.
So 55 years, and how long have you practiced here in Hawaii?
Since 2074.
So now you're 78, and so all of that, this could destroy you. I don't know. Are you able to practice? You're waiting for the outcome of the decision.
Once you are disbarred in one place, you can't practice anymore.
And what do you wait, 5 years to come back?
By that time, I'll be in
my... Oh, you got to be optimistic now. 78 is the new 38.
That's true. My wife didn't think so.
In fact, I suggest go buy yourself a nice Porsche and get you some Dacron shirts and a gold chain.
Yes.
And, you know...
I want to point out that I have a Porsche. It's a 1991 that I got for $5,000. Cheaper than any other used car I was able to find. I've never had a new car. Mm-hmm. So the situation is that while I'm damaged and destroyed, my clients are devastated. Mm-hmm. They tried to find attorneys to take over the case when I had the supposed stroke. Because the case had been going on for years, and the clients couldn't afford it. So once I go, they lose.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll come back in the next hour. We're down to the last minute or so here, but we'll be back. My guest is Tony Lucretio, attorney here in Honolulu, and we're talking about the disciplinary board, the disciplinary council, ODC, and matters that he's faced with and dealing with them now. So we'll be back shortly. This is the Carol Cox Show.
the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
All candidates.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Thank you, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Another lovely day here in Hawaii. So, you can pick this up at podcast at carolcox.com, or you can also go to KWAI 1080 AM and live stream on both websites. My guest today is Tony Lucretio, Mr. Tony Lucretio, attorney, and we're talking and discussing his situation with the disciplinary board of the ODC, Office of Disciplinary Counsel, and we're going to hop back into that and listen to what he has to say. And as I say, we're giving just a sounding board where, and any of you have situations such as this, please give us a call and the airways are yours. So, good morning again, Tony.
Good morning.
All righty. Go ahead and pick up from where we left off.
All right. Thank you. ODC, excuse me. Sorry. I'm so excited that I finally get a chance to defend myself. The ODC filed three charges against me. What happens when ODC files a charge? It's reviewed by a committee of the disciplinary board, or sometimes just an individual. One of the three charges was thrown out. It's an extremely relevant one as to the next issue, which are the central issue here. It was a charge that I did not appear for a client's hearing and therefore had committed misconduct. The facts were that there had been that we showed up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for that hearing. And the hearing was at 9, exactly the facts in this case. Therefore, there's something called rule of the case. The disciplinary committee ruled that unless there was a showing that I intentionally didn't show up, you couldn't make this a charge against me. Therefore, that rule, that charge was thrown out. Exactly the same facts as this. When you have exact same facts, you have what's called law of the case. Therefore, that ruling that I should have had a hearing and that I should have been permitted to go ahead applies to I should have had a hearing here. And the disciplinary committee ruled that they could not turn a blind eye to the exact same facts as they may have. We'll soon see. Let me next, before my voice, first time in my entire career, my voice has started to disappear physically.
That's what this process seemed to be, taking away your voice.
Maybe the gag is still rooted in the throat somewhere. Anyhow, the next issue, the second charge, was that I did not pay the sanction against me. And I will give to you the declaration of Michael O'Connor, who was the attorney for the insurance company that paid the legal fees and therefore had the right to collect from me. I won't read the whole declaration because I don't think my voice will take it, but I'll give you a copy of the Michael O'Connor declaration, which was sent to ODC and to the disciplinary committee. It says, as soon as I contacted Mr. Locricchio, which was in September of 2013, to pay this amount, he immediately agreed to pay it. In a manner, I accepted. The problem was my clients couldn't find the paperwork. And it took them quite a while to do it. But all the time, Mr. Locricchio and his wife, and that's important, agreed to have a lien placed on their house to pay the penalty. The penalty was in, excuse me again, I'll do this slowly. The penalty was in my name only. I was uncollectible. I didn't have any assets of my own. I had to agree to do something very rare and say, yes, my wife and I will agree to put a lien on our house so we can pay you. That's extraordinary. That is great conduct. And we said it immediately. That was kept from the disciplinary committee. It was hidden and covered up. That's a scandal. You don't do that. Michael O'Connor verified it had been paid. That satisfaction of judgment was entered. The company that I had sued also signed that I paid it. Can you believe, I said to myself, that they're still pursuing that? Yes, because they were vindictive, because I had filed with the Supreme Court a mandamus action because of the cover-up of the attorney sending, Lex Smith was his name, I can mention his name, who is the mayor's campaign manager, current mayor, and has great power. He sent this 100-page report.
Is he part of the police commission or somewhere? He was or still is? Or
he was, yes. He was part of some important commission and was going to be, no, he was a member of the commission and was going to be appointed chair. Mm-hmm. And we screamed. And they withdrew his name. They withdrew his name.
But he's still a practicing
attorney. Oh, you betcha. And the fact that they did not hold a hearing on our complaint. They didn't rule for us. They didn't rule against us. So Lex Smith got out of his misconduct of sending this to a judge and having it used to evict families from their homes. They owned the homes. Guess who ended up with three of those homes? Lex Smith, personally, and his wife. This is a scandal.
And where were these homes located?
In Kahuku.
Okay, the plantation.
That had been promised to the residents or their heirs for a reasonable price. A reasonable price was agreed on, and then they increased it by 100% with all kinds of liabilities added. That was a scandal. Anyway, because the Michael O'Connor information was suppressed, then I did not get a fair hearing. Because the James Slemons information was suppressed. The rules require a fair hearing. The rules do not say you can restrict an attorney to 20 minutes to answer 72 pages. Once they did that and insisted on it, they went further and made me go first in a criminal trial or any trial where the accused is accused. The accuser has to go first.
And present their case.
Present their case. And then I get my lousy 20 minutes to rebut. They insisted I go first. And then they rebutted and said, oh, sorry, you used up your 20 minutes. You can't say a word. I was ready, and in the letter to me by this, I believe, biased, wildly biased chairman of the disciplinary committee, he promised that I would get to respond to questions from the board. As soon as the charges against me were read, he ended the hearing. Sal, you've already used your 20 minutes. He did not allow the board to ask any questions. I set up the tiny amount of time I had so that I could respond to questions. The hearing became an unfair hearing when this chair arbitrarily, without the consent of the board, eliminated the questions. This, I called it a kangaroo court. Now, normally, an attorney can't do that, but I couldn't think of any other description when they eliminate, when they give you 20 minutes to answer 72 pages, when they make you go first, and then when they stop the board from asking any questions. members of the board are listening, I would believe, just curiosity. What would he have said if we'd given him the opportunity beyond the 20 minutes? So I can't blame the board, but for certain I blame that chair for conducting an illegal hearing. What he did with the executive session, what he did allowing the accused party to be in the executive session. How do we know that? Because this cocky ODC guy came into the cubbyhole and said, the hearing has commenced. It can't commence. We're out here. Mm-hmm. You got to open it. He then said, and I said that. He said, I'm sorry, we are in executive session. One would never, never know he was in executive session unless he blew the whistle on himself. John is here and can confirm that's exactly what he said.
Yes.
Thank you, John.
John.
John was one of the people in the cubbyhole, member of the public, who was excluded along with other members of the public. Therefore, by his knowing that he was going to get away with the violation, he said, hey, we. You don't say we. And the Supreme Court must listen to the violation, the four violations. Hiding the information. The rule of the case is you do get a hearing unless you prove the attorney intentionally did not show up at 9 o'clock but showed up at 1 o'clock. Next, suppressed the declarations which showed all of these charges were false. James Slemons and Michael O'Connor and Barbara LaCricchio's declaration. The attack on my wife by the attorney, calling her declarations frivolous when they were part of a divorce, of a separation. 46 years of marriage. How dare they? I tried to keep it private, but no. Mm-hmm. That chair decided my wife must do this publicly.
They compelled her?
They said if you want to have her deposition, her declaration, it must be public. That's terrible. There was no need for that. And I chastised the chair. Do I have a right to chastise him? You bet your life.
But it was a choice that they had. They could make either
sure.
or, right?
Exactly.
So your concern or the debate is whether they just had poor ethics or poor in not taking consideration of the privacy.
My wife was not being accused.
Mm-hmm.
She was a witness. And what they did is they forced the witness to make very, very embarrassing statements, which wasn't necessary. It could have been privileged and not made public. They insisted it be made public. How do we know? Because James Pickerton announced it on the record.
But that suggests to me that either you've lost some of your sharpness, because you know that if, in fact, as you described, they're out to get you, so to speak, or just cut your soul of your feet from it, why would you be inclined? Did you still have a little trust that they would actually respect the privacy, listen to her testimony, and in turn treat it?
In 55 years of practice,
mm-hmm.
I have never heard of such a ridiculous, insensitive, inhumane ruling. I told the chair, mm-hmm. your ruling was insensitive and inhumane and simply not nice.
But it shouldn't. I'm just curious, why is it coming as a shock when they're out to get, when you know that the wolves are nipping at your heels? Why would you walk that way?
I had to walk that way because of 46 years of marriage. Mm-hmm. I had to try and protect my wife mm-hmm. from these nasty people, from this nasty chair. And that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. If I didn't try and protect her, and it was made public, I couldn't live with myself afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I see. So it was vetting that issue as you were going, transparency.
Right.
So what's next in this situation? And it seems, I don't know much about the ODC other than I've heard many attorneys who I've met, and some are absolutely nightmarishly afraid, frightened of the ODC, and others say, no problem. And it's like, well, gee, that suggests that there's some discretion on their part, who gets the stick and who gets and who don't, you know?
Because this transcript of this hearing is public, and I have now made my public statement, there's one other issue I have to resolve, and that is the lack of credibility of Tony Lucricchio, which was given to the mm-hmm. thing. Once your credibility is attacked in a criminal trial or any kind of trial, you are only then free to bring up your history, showing your credentials mm-hmm. and why you have good credibility. Because they attacked my credibility, and that's on the minutes of the hearing, then I can go in to that next phase. And let me try to do that as quickly as possible. I went to law school at a Jesuit university in Detroit. I saved money to go to law school and ran out of money after my first semester in law school. So I had to teach full time and go to law school at night and during my lunch hour, and because I was teaching at a Catholic school, during the time the kids went to Mass, and I took a 2-hour class, drove to law school and back again. The dean of the law school was somewhat elitist, which he'd be first to agree with, and he called the law school the Harvard of the Midwest and wanted to get rid of the night school because you cannot, in his mind, go to law school and work, that the law was a jealous mistress. So the board wouldn't let him cancel the night school. They said, you've got to have it. I graduated top man in my class. I must add, in all honesty, there were only 4 of us in the class. And I won what's called the book. When you take a class in law school and you win the highest score on your exams, you get this research book from the publishing company. I want a lot of those books.
Now, this process you're going through now, if they rule unfavorably or disbar you, who do you appeal to, or can you appeal, or that's the final word?
The Supreme Court has to issue the disbarment. Many people say the Supreme Court simply rubber stamps the ruling of the disciplinary committee. My belief is that, and we don't know this for sure yet, and that's why we'll have to come back once they do that. I've said to you that after you review all of these documents, and I apologize, Mr. Cox, for entrapping you to read them, you're going to have questions, and I will answer those questions. Mm-hmm. We don't need to answer those on the air, but in your findings, and you may make only one finding. You should have given them a hearing. That may be your only finding. If I didn't have the hearing, all the rest of it is unnecessary because she canceled the hearing.
Mm-hmm.
The time passed.
She being Marjorie Bronster.
That's correct.
Okay.
Once she canceled the hearing, her extension of time for it, you cannot, under the rules, have a hearing because the time passed. I kept within the time limits the rules allow. Her 72 pages was written to make it appear that I had caused, on the front page, delay after delay. By using just her report, what is shown is that I did not cause any delays, that I stayed within the time limits the rules allowed for the hearing. During that time, I had my entire shoulder replaced. That prior to the time, I was on drugs because...
Prescribed drugs.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I mean,
we have to be very careful here.
Did you hear he had a drug addict?
Yes. Prescribed drugs.
But he's still addicted, even though they're prescribed.
What happens is all of the cartilage in my shoulder had disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So that it was bone on bone. Any movement of that shoulder sent me through the roof without the prescribed drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Bronson ruled that I should have had my hearing earlier, that I shouldn't have taken the prescribed drugs.
Mm.
Not only that, but before the operation could occur, I had infections in my teeth. They do not operate on you unless those infections are cured. They cure them by pulling out large numbers of my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
A painful process, which also included prescribed drugs to just get by. The insensitivity of Marjorie Bronson and her report that I should have gone ahead anyway, I did. And I was going to pull open my shirt and let you see the thing, but I don't want to be accused of lewd conduct.
On the radio.
On the radio.
Because the listeners can see that.
That's right.
And they'll be horrified.
So I did what I needed to do. She, on the other hand, had to create this false, monstrous 72 pages to try and deceive the disciplinary committee. She thought they would be stupid enough to buy that. Mm-hmm. I had hoped they wouldn't be stupid enough to buy it. I didn't get a chance to let them know what she had done. I had said it, but left it open for questions that never occurred. In answering your questions, the Supreme Court is the only one who can disbar me based on recommendations of the disciplinary committee.
So they will only make the recommendation. They don't make the decision or determination.
They don't have the power to
disbar me. Okay, so they're just the committee that listens and quote, weigh the facts. And prepare the case.
Excuse my... yes.
Do I detect a bit of cynicism?
Well, the 20-minute facts is... This is absolutely ludicrous. Ludicrous.
Well, hey, we can take this up on another... And please stay around. I got this other gentleman on the phone.
Good,
and don't want to end up... But close it smoothly and
all right, let me just wrap
quick,
up.
And then...
My reputation as national chair of all the legal aid project directors, my reputation as the agent for the Federated States of Micronesia, my reputation as doing my legal practice as pro bono, probably 90% of my practice, is all goes to my credibility. Mm-hmm. That should have been, and I now say, hey, I'm not a bad guy. Look at my reputation. Yeah. And that's now in for the first time.
Well, yeah, well, thank you, Tony Lucretio, and he's going to hang around here for a bit. We're going to talk a different subject with the caller here, I think. But let me just remind you, Tony, that in case you were busy being a lawyer, and that's quite distracting, this is a town and a state where you could serve as a current state senator and be a drug addict, and then go back and want to put in, become a dispensary for legal marijuana. And then you could also be the city prosecutor and then go and want to become a dispensary owner. And I've even have good information that the Attorney General's office at high levels was smoking marijuana on any given day and went through heavy grams of it. But many of them. So I understand the frustration, and I think when we get to the higher levels of justice and civil rights and all that, I don't think there's any playing room, in my opinion. Not in defense of you or anything, but there's some serious questions and the major flaws here. We have a Supreme Court, but I look at this whole process, and let me tell you, I have concerns, whether you get knocked in the head and your house bombed and you never get an interview from a police officer. You understand? And yet, we're supposed to be law-abiding, respecting citizens and participate in a democracy. I'm inclined to believe that if you are in violation, you violate client issues and privileges that you have, then deal with you with justice and be swift about it and appropriate. But when you look the other side and say, gee, look at all of this tolerance. And we had a case here, a story that we did many times, the schools, the charge schools. We exposed Jeffrey Piontek, and he's going in, found guilty, and he gets 4-year probation. So anyway, this is kind of scary, and it suggests that we got troubled times ahead of us.
But let me make one brief comment. Mm-hmm. I am excited. I may have the chance of exposing what's going on at ODC mm-hmm. and the disciplinary committee. I have to pay a rather high price to do it, but once they made it public, I can't be gagged, and that's very exciting. Because other attorneys protecting their clients will come after me, and they have to know that they have protection. The Supreme Court will have a chance to protect attorneys from this abuse,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And that is exciting.
Okay, well, hang around. You might have a little insight for this young man that's calling in. Donald, good morning. How are you?
Hello, Mr. Cox.
How are you?
I'm fine, very fine.
Well, we've been talking with Tony Lucretio, an attorney here, and who's dealing with the disciplinary board. But you're calling because you're having an experience with the Department of Land and Natural Resources. And
yeah, big experience.
And specifically, what they're saying is that you are feeding cats at the Kehi Boat Harbor. And that, let me just get straight to this point, and then we'll talk about it. You are hereby directed to immediately cease and desist from depositing or spreading any type of food brought throughout the food throughout the facility. Failure to comply with this directive may result in further administrative actions that include, but is not limited to, fines, citations, and or loss of your mooring privileges within the harbor. That sounds like the DLNR is a judge, jury, instigator, and prosecutor, and lynchman. If I'm not mistaken, you reside on, you live on your boat. That's your residence, right?
28 years I've been here, yeah.
And so, Ed Underwood, and this is signed by Ed Underwood, and so that you'll know that I have, in fact, contacted the DLNR, requested that they participate in the conversation on air, and basically, as usual, they blew me off because I'm just a little nobody and nothing. But you and I, Don, we'll try to work this one out, and I think there will be people out there. There is a move to ban feeding of cats, but again, it has to be in a process that if there's a law banning it, there are people committing greater crimes, and they don't get evicted or loss of mooring or anything. And your situation is you live on your boat. So go ahead and tell us a little bit of background on what is happening.
Well, it all started when they moved their new office down here to the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And the harbor's always been a dumping ground for animals that people are going to the mainland or moving into a place where they cannot
mm-hmm.
animals. And we've been feeding, trapping, and neutering these cats for 20 years here. And now that Ed moved down here, he doesn't want to see the cats around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the only one that feeds them. There's about 10 or 15 other people are in this area that feed these cats.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have relationships and stuff with the cats and everything. And Ed told me that he was going to come in here and trap all these cats and move them out of here and bulldoze down any places where they might be living. And he'd give me strict orders not to feed anymore. But I and several other people have been trapping here for years and trapping and used to stay out all night and, you know, and trapping and you haul them down and neuter them and return them. It's a big project, and it costs a lot of money and time and effort. And he doesn't want to consider any of that. He just says, it's done, out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been ignoring his request, and it's come down to where when I went to renew my contract for a year on my boat, he only gave me 90 days and told me that if I don't stop feeding the animals, it will not go past.
He only gave you 90 days, but did he give you a letter saying that you're no longer going to have be extended for a year?
It's necessary. That they feel coming out of their verbal mouth mm-hmm. is law. And I just can't accept that kind of mm-hmm. actions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, they're public service. They're not tyrants.
But now, let me ask Tony here. We're gonna put him in and borrow his time while he's here. Tony, are we mm-hmm. overreacting or drawing the conclusion that judge, jury, and prosecutor is that right or consistent with fairness?
DLNR has a reputation of being judge, jury, and prosecutor.
I'm losing contact with you.
Hold on, Don. Go ahead.
Yeah. This case here is you have to look at what is the authority of the person saying you must stop feeding. And very important, you are offering a service by neutering those cats.
Yes.
And you've been offering that service. Is there going to be a law that stops the Humane Society from feeding cats and neutering cats? If not, that's unequal protection.
You say, it's not yet.
Yeah, well, there's no law. So, in fact, the Humane Society went and fought against the new bill that was available for banning feeding.
That's right. The other thing you must look at is people feed birds. Birds poop. Did he go after the people feeding birds? People have dogs that are not their own that they feed. In other words, the application is tailored to you and you alone. Law doesn't work that way. You have the right to go into court and get an injunction to stop him from not giving you your year's lease. The fact that he's already told you he won't give you the year's lease sets up your case. In my opinion, I'm still an attorney, and I'd be happy to represent you if I continue to be, but don't count on it. You've got a great case, and you should be allowed to offer the service. Humane Society can't get to all those cats. You have prevented, by neutering, thousands and thousands of cats from coming into existence. You should get an award from DLNR, not this nonsense. The 90 days only is an act that violates your rights.
Well, you know, he's also claiming that what I'm doing is littering, that their own people gather up stuff and throw it in the dishes and stuff, trash, feces and rocks and stuff, and throw it in the dishes that I feed the animals out of. And that seems to be acceptable attitude by them. Mm-hmm. And to me, I figure that's littering. What I'm putting out is food. It's not litter, and it's eaten up.
Let's see, Don, there's a caller here. Let's see if they...
I think it's just he singled me out, you know,
mm-hmm.
the way he's moving on it.
Well, I call him Ed Underhand Underwood. Because, look, we've shown where the state is losing millions, and he covers it up and hides and then go and deal, get in bed with the people that are in violation. When and many serious issues, the fuel tanks behind him on that state property has leaked thousands and thousands of gallons of fuel. And yet he sat on his ass and did nothing. He didn't approach them and still haven't gone and take any action of substance to prosecute this company and run them out of the property because they've spilled thousands and thousands of fuel, gallons of fuel. Hold on. Caller, thank you for calling. Go ahead. You have a comment or question?
Hi.
Hi there.
There's some law against animal abuse, and I believe that starvation is animal abuse, and if he's forcing you to starve animals, I believe I'd like to have some feedback on the animal abuse law that can be put in place somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they feel.
I was thinking that maybe the lawyer that's been talking, I forget his name. Is he still there?
Tony Lucretio.
Yes.
Cricchio.
Yeah. I was wondering if you had any idea of what law that is that can be put into play about the animal abuse and starving these animals is obviously animal abuse. There's a law against animal abuse. Mr. Lucretio.
Yeah. I think what's going on here is that it's selection of one type of animal, cats. And they're anti-cat. You're going to go against birds, et cetera, et cetera. Your point is a really good one, and that is this service this man is offering that comes by feeding the cats so he can neuter them, is that illegal? And I can't see any way it would, and I think your point is that those cats would...
In addition to that fact that I'm sure that's maybe all he needs, but, I mean, for other people, too, that maybe are just feeding and are not in placed in any other kind of situation, you know, there's also the fact about, you know, about that starving the cat is abuse. And but if you know that there's something that I can find, I'd like to find that. Look, is it all right if I read you a letter to the editor real fast that I just had and not published yet, but it is here. A couple sentences. But anyway, this is what I wanted to read, and I thought I'd read it over the air. That feeding cats actually saved the life of a Hawaiian person that I know. I know a very kind person who was very unhappy with a life and job, and this person was on the verge of suicide before joining a group of people that's been... let me make this bigger so I can read it. The trap neuter release. I'm actually a veterinarian, and I help a lot of very smart, responsible people involved in trap neuter release management. I've seen places out of control cat populations that have become stable, well-managed colonies. They worm the cats. Some of the cats actually get flea treatment. And well-fed cats are generally out of sight and sleeping during the day. They're nocturnal. They hunt at night and mostly get rats. And this is addressed to the toxoplasmosis issue, which is a flu-like disease that people and animals normally are become immune. And it's very, very rare that, especially in birds, that it would be harmful. And its importance is exaggerated by these people who are against the trap neuter release management. Important diseases like salmonella, leptospirosis, E. coli can actually be cut down if the rats are under control. So that I wanted to read, and they mm-hmm. have not published it, but I put it for the editorial.
Well, thank you. Donald, if you could, please, just and hold on, caller. You are now the ripe old age of, what, 61?
70. I'm 79.
So 79. So this is just a bad day for senior citizens, and especially, what is it, what's happening here? Senior males are not a good day for you guys. Is this what we got to look forward to, beat up on the seniors?
I didn't hear the last part you said there, but these people seem to have an attitude that their word is law, and I've lived under this for some time now, and I've been here, I'm grandfathered in the harbor here before they ever had moorings. I live on a mooring, and they seem to think that they can just tell me what to do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Harassment, because there are so many other issues down there at that harbor, and misappropriation of fundings and abuse of authority, you name it. So, caller, are you there? You got any more comments for them?
Did you go on the air with what I said? I didn't hear it.
Oh yeah,
you want me to read it again?
No, it's all on there.
Oh, okay, I just want to thank you so much for you and I'll do whatever I can to write letters about your situation with the harbor, because that's just not right.
His name is
completely inhumane, and I'm just really upset and nervous by it.
His name is Donald Filippi. You're right, Donald?
That's correct. Yeah.
And so. I don't understand. I'm not an attorney, but I do believe that, as you said, the Humane Society has actually, they are the ones supporting and promoting spay, trap, neuter release. And it's a good thing, because there's nobody on this planet going to ever manage all of the cats that are stray. All the scientists and all the people with the fancy articles and editorials, they're full of you-know-what. And they're never, but it makes money for them now. I mean, it gives them a position. They won't contact Donald and have an intensive trap neuter program. And that will, you'll see the population decline, right? So the real issue here, Donald, is that, in my opinion, you're being singled out by a bunch of ruthless government employees who have no control. In this Suzanne case, let this guy let people steal from the government. Haleiwa Boat Harbor is falling apart. The office, abuse, just one after the other. And yet, you're 79 years old. You've been feeding cats and neutering and spaying and trapping with other people. And they, in turn, going to single you out when there are many other areas that people feed. And I don't know. And you would surely, you have a permit, an agreement with them. You would, wouldn't that constitute going to the Board of Land and Natural Resources, having them review it?
Here's what I'd suggest that you do. You write a letter to this individual demanding your year lease. And if he turns you down, then you ask for a hearing before the board. The veterinarian who just testified, and I really think that testimony was incredible, will show up at that hearing. You are a menace to rats. I'm talking about the small furry.
The furry gray one.
Yes. We need health protection from rats who carry those disease. The cats take care of that for us. Make sure you demand the year and point out you're being retaliated against for exercising your rights. That gives you a hearing before the DLNR board, and it will be a public hearing. And if the DLNR chair backs up that individual, then she carries the taint.
I'll do that.
Good.
Okay.
I'll write him a letter and see what he says.
Okay, and keep me posted, and I'll get by there, and probably today, Don, and we'll pick up that computer and get you going so you can write a smoking letter.
All righty.
Okay, Donald. Thank you.
And thank Donald, you very much.
You bet.
And you too, Tony.
Thank you, Don.
Ciao.
Tony, go ahead with a few more, two more minutes, and we'll be done.
Well, I think that the public will find that I didn't get a hearing. A scandal that they used secret executive sessions when they broke a simple rule. I broke a simple rule. I didn't show up at 9. I did show up at 1. The cover up by boards and chairs of boards and public staff, government staff, must not be tolerated. We must yell, scream. I have been screaming on your radio program because it is the only chance I have had to speak publicly. Mm-hmm. And I really, really appreciate it.
Well, we'll do it again, and thank you. So, Tony Lucretio, and I appreciate you coming in. We'll do this again in the coming weeks.
Good.
All right. Aloha. And then we're going to have, I think, probably Rod Tam on next week. We've been busy with other things, but we'll get to you. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. And this is Carol Cox, carolcox.com.
Dirty business, how my baby treat me, nobody's business but mine. Nobody, dirty business, how my baby treat me, nobody's business but my own. Say, baby, did you get that letter? If you take me back, I'll treat you better. Nobody's business but mine. ain't nobody's dirty business how my baby treat me. Nobody's business but my own.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.